Congratulations! You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Right, you're tuned into the One Radio 1 91 FM, Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is 26 minutes to the hour of 9, and it's time to meet those vying to be the next mayor of our fair city. And this morning we're joined by Bill Ackland and Sophie Barker. Good morning to you both.
Kia ora.
Morning, Jamie.
Right, thank you both for coming in this morning. An absolute pleasure. Bill, you're back. Three terms on council, 2004 through to 2013. Why have you decided to put your hat back in the ring?
A number of reasons. First up, the reason I stood down was it was time to do something else. Things didn't quite feel right for me at the time. So moved away and went into a few other roles throughout the last 9 years. Now I feel as though the time is right to go back. So the kids have all grown up. They've all flown the coop.
Yeah,
and I feel as though that I'm in the right position now to you know, to get back in and try and do some good.
Okay, and Sophie, you're a one-term councillor. This is your second go, but your first running for mayor. What spurred you to take on the top job?
I want to change. You know, I've sat in council for 3 years and been really frustrated about us not carrying out a number of our strategies. Disappointed at the results that we've had from our residents' opinion survey, where we've got 25% satisfaction with mayor and councillors, and I want to change that, and I want to make sure that we deliver the most livable city in New Zealand.
Bill, what is the job of the mayor? How do you see it?
I see the job of the mayor, first up, is a facilitator. The mayor is there to obviously chair council and lead council. But I think the mayor is also, you know, the key part of the mayoralty is the communicator to the general public. So residents, you know, they need to know that they can actually approach the mayor on a one-on-one basis, but they also should be expecting the mayor to be delivering the sort of information that I don't believe is getting out right now.
Sophie, same for you?
The communication, of course, but is the total leadership role, and it's a powerful role because it appoints the chairs to the committees and sets the agenda. So that's a, you know, really important role, and also is the, I guess, the personification of the city. When we have national news coming down, it's the person who is standing there and telling the story as it is, and also promoting the city, which I think is a really important role of the mayor.
What do you see as the main issues facing Dunedin right now? Let's say three main issues, Sophie. Well, what do you think?
Climate change, yeah. Number one, because we have declared a climate emergency in 2019 and we still don't have a plan 3 years later, despite other cities having plans, so that's not good. Transportation is obviously a key issue, transport and parking. When we're looking at the one-ways around the hospital, that's going to be really important because we need a transport system that works for everyone, you know, whether you're in a car, a cycle, walking. Transportation, what's the third one? Environment, that's the passion of mine because I worked out at the Albatross Colony and saw what was happening, the degradation of the environment, so I'd like to see us focus on those.
All right, and Bill, same for you. What do you
Slightly different. When it comes to climate change, obviously that's everybody's responsibility. It's a global issue. It's not just Dunedin. I'd be a little bit more bespoke when it comes to what we should be looking at a local level, and that is you know, protecting our coastlines. So obviously the coastal erosion that we're experiencing in various parts of our outer edge, and of course South Dunedin. You know, they are really our big concerns at a local level. I was watching the annual plan meetings and certainly heard the discussion around you know, what the council should or shouldn't be doing in relation to climate change. And yeah, I'm not sure what the benefit is, and maybe Sophie can inform me. I'm not sure what the benefit is for the Dunedin City Council being 20 years ahead of the government. You know, if we're going to be carbon neutral, you know, by 2030, and the rest of the country is not going to be until 2050, then how's that really helping, and what's it going to cost us to get there?
Okay, but what do you see as the three main issues?
Yep, okay, so as I say, with the climate change, the three main issues, as I've highlighted there, I'm a bit more pointed when it comes to climate change. I certainly agree with Sophie in relation to the transport and parking side of things. And then The next one that I'll put in there is safety around the city. I think that our certain parts of our city are exposed in a way in which I think that as a council we need to figure out how we can make those areas safer, whether it's through extra security. I'm not quite sure exactly what it is. I'm not sure of the communication between council and police.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that safety around the city is a big thing.
Bill, what's the current council getting right?
Well, they've got the Mosgiel pool right. We worked on that 10 years ago, and the council of the day didn't want to spend the money on it. Mm-hmm. So that's good. When it comes to other specific things, nothing jumps out.
No.
I don't doubt that once the work in the CBD is finished, that things are going to look better. But I think the downside to that is the way that it's sort of been communicated and rolled out.
Okay. Right, parking and transport. Obviously, the big thing on a lot of people's minds, especially the parking side of things, I guess. With the redevelopment of George Street and surrounding roads and then cycleways as well, and a few other reasons, we've seen the loss of a few parks. How do we rectify that? Is parking the be-all and end-all, or is it about alternative transports, Sophie?
Parking's something that people find irritating every day. Everybody wants a free park right outside where they want to go.
Yes, of course.
And we've done the studies and we show that, there's, 80% of parking usage in the parking buildings, etc. So there is parking around. I think the challenge is making sure that the city's accessible for everyone. So that's that they can come in by car, by bike, by bus, etc. And go about what they want to do. And I voted for the one-way on George Street. And one of the reasons that I voted it, apart from safety and amenity, was that there were going to be more parks in that option rather than the two-way option. We're also doing some work on parking now. There's a strategic piece of work going on which will use new technology to help people find parks. I think that's an important step forward as well, to save people driving around looking for them.
What about you, Bill?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, it seems to me that the removal of parks over the last, I'll say 9 years because I haven't been involved in the last 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've witnessed, it seems to have an ulterior motive to it, and that is to try and get people out of their cars. And I think that is not the way to do it. If reducing the use of cars or changing modes of transport is the key thing because of the interests of climate change effects and so on, then it needs to be clarified as that, and mm-hmm. it needs to be promoted that way. So, I see that they're trying to force people out of their own motor vehicles by way of reducing parking is not the way to do it. And from my perspective, the parking availability in the city, it doesn't have to be free, gosh. But if somebody wants to be able to park on the street to get close to where they're going to for a number of reasons, it could be an appointment that somebody has got somewhere and maybe their mobility is not the best. And I'm not even talking to the extent of people having mobility cars. There's people around that just can't walk that far because of perhaps the issues they've got at the time. But the other thing too is that if you want to go somewhere in the city and park handy,
mm-hmm.
then the parks should be available, number one. But number two, be prepared to pay for it.
Yeah. I guess when it comes to having, ease of access for people that don't have, who have accessibility issues, maybe is it the need for more people to potentially get disabled parking permits or things like that? Because if it's just normal parks and you want people with accessibility issues to use them, you've got other people that just want to use them. So how do we find that space
for
those that need it?
Yeah, that's right, and that's a very tough one. We learnt a couple of days ago when we were talking to the Disabled Persons Assembly that 24% of New Zealand, or New Zealanders, have a disability. And so let's suggest that everybody, for some reason, qualified for a mobility card. Mm-hmm. Looking at Dunedin, we'd need 30,000 mobility parks. Well, at least mobility parks to cater for 30,000 people. Well, that's not practical. So something else needs to be done to have the access and the availability for those who need it.
Sophie, we've lost parks, but we've also grown as a city, right? The population has grown.
Yeah, the population's grown hugely. I remember when I was looking after the cruise industry and we were 123,000 and now we are 134,000.
Yeah.
So it has grown and we do need to cater to more people. And going back to the disability parking issue, we have put in more mobility parks. And my mum can't walk very far because she's sprained both her ankles and she's 80. So we make sure that we come into town early, that we use a parking building which has lifts, etc. So there are ways around utilising all the parking well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Another big subject right now is Three Waters. I think one of the big reasons why it's such a big thing is that it's confusing. No one really knows what's happening. Like, I mean, I've read the thing 1,000 times and I'm still confused. So do you think, Bill, that the council's done a good job of kind of explaining what's going on and you know, being transparent about what the council stands for with Three Waters?
I think the council's done its best to be able to communicate that. But as you say, no matter where you look, you can't get straight answers anywhere. My biggest concern with Three Waters is, you know, really what does it mean in terms of any sort of control we're going to have at our local level, mm-hmm. of our own infrastructure? And the other thing too is, where is the funding coming from? You know, at the moment we have targeted rates, so if we don't have the infrastructure any longer, where is the funding coming from? So the targeted rate's still going to stay, and we pay that on to, you know, Zone D or whatever it is that we would be part of. Does that stay with the ratepayer? And then when it comes to the funding of those things, does that come through government taxes? I don't know, and that's what I'd like to get the answers to.
Sophie, where do you stand on Three Waters?
It's a really messy issue, and as you say, it's hard to understand, and I've read hundreds and hundreds of pages. Basically, the government decided on a solution, and they're trying to sell us the solution without consultation, and that's been why our council's got a bit scrappy over it, even in between us. Like, we agree with the outcome, which is that everyone has safe drinking water and that we're better on the receiving environment, wastewater and stormwater, that we're better in doing that, but it's the method of getting there. What we wanted to fight for was an Otago Southland model, because it's like, here's the solution, here's four entities, and this is what they're going to do, and this is the governance regime, and we're like, we're losing our local voice. We're losing say. If we decided perhaps to make Wakawaiti a larger centre for that growing population, how would we get a decision through about where the pipes are going to go in the ground? So it's that loss of local voice, the spectre of privatisation, that's the big one.
Yeah.
You know, once you've amalgamated all these 67 councils' assets into four entities, which could become one, which could be saleable under a future government, you can't tell me that they've got enough controls in there.
A lot of the people out there think that the council's kind of folded on the subject. They don't see the fight. Mm. Do you think that's a lack of communication from the council?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I fought for this way back last year. I was like, how are we going to communicate with people? This is what Christchurch is doing. We need to talk to our community about what this means, because it's devolved into a racist, they're stealing our assets rant, and that's not okay. We've got to look at what the future holds. A lot of councils can't afford their infrastructure. You look at some of the smaller councils around and they've proudly got no debt, and the reason that they've got no intergenerational debt is because they haven't invested in their water systems. And Dunedin has invested in its infrastructure. Our water's doing really well. You know, we were scoring 100% on delivering that water, but other places haven't done as well. So it's that centralisation versus localism argument.
Mm-hmm. I bet you both remember the E-rated Swampy Summit water from back in the day.
It was EE, and we managed to get it to CC, and then we got it to AA.
Hey, I grew up with water and with tadpoles coming out of it, out of Larnet Castle, so I know all about dodgy water, and look at me, healthy ears.
You know, I spent time out on the Tyree in a similar thing when I was in my teens, and it was more the issue of the pipes being frozen in the winter and you couldn't actually have a shower.
Yeah. I grew up some of my teen years in Cromwell. I remember that very well.
Happy old memories, eh?
Yeah. A big thing for both of you is trust and accountability for the council. The last survey had overall satisfaction with the DCC at 40% and 40% satisfied, and only 25% of respondents were satisfied with the performance of the mayor and councillors. What do you see, Bill, as the causes of this, and how would you improve those numbers?
The way I would improve it is through honesty. You talk about trust. Trust is something you've got to earn, but you have to earn it by being upfront and actually speak the truth of what's actually happening within the council. I think that Sophie's already touched on it many a time, that the consultation process is not quite where it needs to be, but also the communication. And so the way I see it is that what is council spending money on? People want us to always be considering keeping the rates increase lower or even dropping rates if possible, but in reality what's going to be the impact of that? And I think that message has to go out very, very clearly without people needing an accounting degree to be able to follow it.
All right, Sophie, same for you. Why do you think those numbers are so low, and what would you do to improve it?
It's the C word, communication. Yeah. You know, I think we haven't been good at that. We've done a lot of good in the city. We've invested in the infrastructure, the Mosgiel Pool, and we are going forward, but we've been terrible about communicating it. And I think that COVID, another C word, has also had an impact. People are angry and upset and they don't like change, so I don't think we've had the positive leadership that the city deserves. You know, the city wants to feel heard, the city wants a good figurehead that they can relate to, and I think those are things that are letting people down.
Yeah, and it's a different game now even to 3 years ago, and definitely from when you were last there, Bill, with social media and everything else. It's an easier way to communicate, I guess, in a way. But then again, you have to communicate to the whole and just not a few, and you see some certain Dunedin Facebook groups, for example.
Yeah, we don't have a communications plan. I mean, because my background's marketing and comms.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, you have to have a plan, you have to understand your audience and what they're reading, what they're listening to, and then get out and communicate with them in a way that they can understand. Because often, you know, it's the council, and who wants to read stuff from them unless it's relatable, unless it's important.
I think the other thing on that, Jamie, just to jump in, is that, as you say, things have changed since I was on council, social media and so on. It's very, very easy for people to sit back and criticise from their from their computer. And I think there's a huge imbalance when it comes to the criticism of the likes of a council from, you know, people who have perhaps got a view on one thing, and because of that one thing, they're spreading it across all council operations and activities.
Oh yeah, well, people complain about all of the road cones. It's so many road cones, so many roadworks, and we're like, but you asked us to work on the infrastructure. So, but maybe we need to be better about telling people where the roadworks are. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
And remember, those road cones are $1 a day to hire.
Brightening up the city, one road cone at a time.
That's right. I must point out that the DCC website road closure thing is pretty bad.
Oh, it's terrible. I think. I don't know. Yeah. Needs to be better, doesn't it?
The website.
So hard to find out what's actually closed.
It's an old website, needs upgrading. Yeah.
Oh, in fact, I struggle to navigate it at all. I'm amazed that I found that disabled persons strategy from 2008.
Yeah, that was a good find.
It was amazing that was there. Main thing I was looking for was what happened afterwards. But
that's a mess. Comms is a mess, sorting it out.
Sophie, what are your three biggest achievements from your time on council?
I think focusing on the strategy, so I talked about that, and that was my frustration, because when I worked at council, I worked in the economic development unit, so I was there when the economic development strategy was started, and then everyone's fluffing over here and there, and I'm like, but we have to focus on what our outcomes are, focus on the projects. So I've pulled that into line, and we're doing a refresh on the strategies. It all sounds really boring, but it's really important to get your basics right. The next thing is the CCOs, the Council Controlled Organisations, Aurora, City Forestry, etc. So the governance around them was really loose. They were telling us what they wanted to achieve,
yeah.
And we need to be telling them in a structured way what we wanted them to achieve as well. And the third thing that I'm working on and still pushing through actually is the destination plan. So that's around tourism, and tourism has had a major blow, and we've been working on a destination plan for a while, but I've been pushing that to fast track that along with the heritage strategy, which are two things that I know and I really care about.
Yeah, because of course we're coming out of COVID potentially, yeah. Maybe. Cruise ships are here really soon.
They're going to come. Prepared or not.
Yeah, and from what I'm hearing, the numbers are going to be massive.
Yep.
Not just in terms of the ships coming, but the bookings are very high, which I'm shocked by, to be honest.
Yeah, well, people had credits. So the cruise companies didn't give them refunds, they gave them credits.
Of course.
And then it's interesting, they were marketing 2 years ago about the safety on the cruise ships, because their people are generally, you know, 55 plus, my age, you know, and they're, so they're giving them every expectation that it's going to be amazingly safe and it's a great way to travel. So those numbers are going to come back. And the question is, are we ready? Do we have the buses, the tour operators? That's going to be a challenge because our industry has been devastated and people have left it.
Yeah, hopefully most of that roadworks will be completed on the Port Road.
Yes, yes. Yeah, there's still going to be roadworks from what I hear.
I guess it's been a while, Bill, but what were your three biggest achievements on your time on council?
Well, if you put them in the order of size, then the stadium's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a lot of controversy over it at the time, along with some really horrible things from various people in the community, but at the end of the day, I supported the stadium and I watched it being built, thinking I had a say in this, and I think it was great.
Yeah.
Things like other upgrades, you know, the town hall upgrade, that was a really, really important one at the time, because my background in the entertainment industry, we were out of town a lot, at conferences and the like. And I can remember the likes of going to the facilities in Christchurch, and they had the convention centre and the town hall and James Hay, and all those places were all sort of interconnected, and their staff and the ease of getting things done, the quality of production, all that sort of stuff was just fantastic. And whenever we said we were from Dunedin, it was like, oh, really? Oh, well, you won't be getting any cooperation there. And it was true. You know, our facilities were not up to scratch, but neither was the attitude. The attitude was all wrong. And and I think with the upgrade, you know, of the Town Hall Dunedin Centre was a huge step in the right direction. And obviously with it coming under DVML, then, you know, my expectation there is that you've got professionals, you know, not just running one thing, but doing the same sort of principle as what Christchurch did. So that part I felt was a big win. And the other thing was Toitū. You know, there was a lot of discussion and debate around whether the investment in Toitū was going to be worthwhile. And I think that it speaks for itself now, big time. You know, people love the Settlers Museum, and I think the fact that it links to the Chinese Garden is another really good thing.
All right. Let's get down to a couple of topics quickly. Relationship with Mana Whenua, how do you see that, Sophie, and is that something you want to strengthen further?
Yeah, absolutely, to strengthen. And I think we've had some challenges along the way, especially around Three Waters, and that points to lack of leadership and lack of communication from our mayor, actually, because I was asking to have cultural competence training for our councillors. They should be able to say Ōti Pōti and Wakawaiti and know what those mean, and that was not forthcoming. I also wanted us to be part of all council to be part of the Māori Participation Working Party, so now we actually get invited to the meetings, you know, 2 years later. And also I've been learning Te Reo personally and going along to Arai Marae, because we need to work with Mana Whenua. That's the partnership under the treaty, and I look forward to it. I have many friends there, so I look forward to strengthening those relationships. And you can see the positive impact that it's had in the city, the designs that are going down George Street, the Ebb Hotel. You know, it's exciting to have those stories told in our landscape, and for Mana Whenua to actually feel like they're not overwhelmed by colonialistic architecture.
Bill, relationship?
Oh, look, same thing. Our relationship with Mana Whenua is very, very important to the city, very important to Mana Whenua, but also I think we have to consider too that the relationship or relationships that the Dunedin City Council has with lots of different community groups and stakeholders needs to be at the same sort of level. And I'm talking about the business community. I'm talking about various community groups in different parts of the city that have their own focus. Those relationships are imperative. And I wouldn't actually take one away from the other.
What about the arts sector? With Sammy's, in limbo, we're down our theatre since you were last on council, Bill. The Crown, things like that. How do you feel about the arts sector, Sophie, and what's your vision for it?
Oh, I know the arts sector's pretty annoyed, and I don't blame them. The Aotearoa strategy has fallen by the wayside, and people are not feeling involved. There's supposed to be an annual hui, which I've asked about many times. How many annual hui have there been? None. It's just not good enough. Our relationship with our arts community is really important, and I want to take that forward. We need to look at the options for a performing arts, I say ecosystem, because I think, again, like the government did with Three Waters, it's like, here's the answer, it's this theatre. And you're like, actually, is that the answer? Have you really communicated with the arts sector? So I think that relationship needs to be repaired, and we need to get back to focusing on working together on that strategy and around communication as well.
Bill, arts sector for you?
Yeah, so anything further to be done in that regard, which obviously things do need to be done, starts with asking questions. As a council, you need to find out from the end users as to what do they require. So get that answer first. Second up is, right, what are the options available to us? Is it something, a black box down at the stadium, so to speak? Or is it revitalising Sammy's? Or is it perhaps both? I don't know. But the third part, of course, is how's it going to be funded? And I think that's a crucial part of, how you would put something like that in place to improve what we've got, because to put it all onto the ratepayer, I think would be quite wrong. And so, it's a balance between, obviously, user pays, same sort of principle as going to the pool, Very roughly speaking, you got 50-50, 50% user pays, 50% ratepayer funded. If that's the sort of picture, maybe that's the way to go. But I certainly wouldn't be suggesting that council needs to fund the whole thing, because that's not really doable.
Housing. Student flats are still cold as. Nothing's changed there. Homelessness is on the rise. We've seen that, and there is a lack of affordable housing. I know housing prices are falling at the moment, little by little, but that's not going to last forever. It's just a blip in the system. So what's your plan for housing, Sophie?
So we've just been presented the housing plan last week at council, and it's a great oversight document. So I was pushing along with where is the implementation plan. So it's great that we're all going to work together and with Kāinga Ora, etc., focus on housing. But I think the challenge is, what is the implementation plan and how are we going to do it? How are we going to make sure that everyone has a warm, safe, healthy home? My daughter's a student, so I'm extremely interested in the sort of flats that she's been looking at and the standard of living in the city, because it's one of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, shelter.
Yeah, Bill, how do you feel about the current state of housing?
Yeah, well, if flats are cold, then I ask why. Back when I was on council, the star rating system came in, so that was more of just an awareness thing. It wasn't a law or a bylaw or anything like that. It was awareness for landlords and for tenants to be able to understand just where does that property sit. But since then, there have been law changes, and obviously insulation is a big part of it, and it's gotten to the stage in some places, as far as I understand, that even the walls now can be insulated in old properties, and that can be done in a retrofit sort of manner. But the key thing you've got to remember, even if the place is well insulated, insulation doesn't heat the home. You've still got to heat it. Now, that's up to the actual user. And so, again, I get back to, why are these rental properties cold? Is it a failing on the landlord's behalf? Or is it such that the people living there are not being forthcoming in heating.
Can't afford it, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's right. So that's another part
jersey.
Of it as well.
So I tell my daughter when we're trying to heat our house.
All right. We'll get to closing statements now. Bill, why should people vote for you?
First up, the experience I've had on council, I think, puts me in a good position to hit the ground running. Secondly, my time for 30-odd years as a facilitator in the entertainment industry allows me the confidence to be able to lead people to drive whatever the situation is or the particular group that we're talking about. And third up is that I'm not backwards in coming forward, and so if things aren't right, I'll be making sure that is known. And in addition to that, should I be in the mayoralty role, then I would be looking at straight away how we are going to communicate what the council's doing, what it's costing, in very, very clear terms, and keep it up going, not just at election time. It has to be such that whatever the money is being spent on, that everybody understands what it is and why.
All right. And Sophie, finally you.
Dunedin wants change. I think they want inspiring, open, honest leadership. And I've got a background in business, in heritage and conservation. I've had governance experience, and I've had 3 years on council. I've got a Bachelor of Commerce in Economics from Otago University. So I'm quite analytical as well, and I think that I bring those qualities to council and leadership. I'm open and approachable, and I think people want to see that sort of inspiring, ambitious leadership for the city, because we should be, you know, shouting out that we're one of the main centres of New Zealand and getting our fair share of government funding, etc. We need to do better.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you both for coming in this morning. An absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you. It's been fun.
That was a Radio 191 FM podcast. Find more at r1.co.nz.